Welcome to the Hey Kings podcast. Today on the podcast, I'm joined by Neil Messix, and you might recognize the name Messix. Neil's one of the family owners. Welcome to the podcast.
All right, thanks for having me, John.
The last time you and I did a podcast, it's been some time ago, and it was kind of during the supply chain disruption. We're past that now. I get this sense in the equipment world that the tides are turning from a seller's market to maybe a little more of a buyer's market. Can we start there?
It's been an interesting ride for the last 2-3 years here. So yeah, I mean, when you drive by any dealership at this point, you're going to notice the amount of iron out in the yard is increasing for sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
It looks a lot different than the way it's been here for the last couple of years. So yeah, we're back at the point again that we're starting to have somewhat normal levels of inventory. One of the things that was really hard throughout this couple of years here for us on the dealership side was kind of like projecting how to get this back to normal again, right? Because you go from this point of just having nothing and every machine that shows up is immediately sold. And so we're in the case of we're projecting orders out, you know, 2 years and 2.5 years in advance. And there's definitely cases here where the manufacturers have gotten their act back together pretty quickly and dealerships have maybe overshot normal a little bit. We're starting to have what we should have or maybe a little bit on the strong side again. So yeah, that market is starting to shift again.
This is broad spectrum, right?
Yeah. Really kind of across the board. It's the hay tools are definitely there. Hay tools didn't have the supply problems quite to the same degree that we saw with like tractors and skid steers and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's less electronics, right?
Less electronics and supply chains that tend to be a lot closer to home. I do New Holland and Krohn and Kubota and Pequay and a lot of different companies.
Mm-hmm.
And when you walk through those factories, it's always really interesting to see, you know, some of the parts are made in the factory, but obviously there's supplier involved stuff there too. It's always very interesting to me how local the suppliers tend to be to those factories. In my case here, walking through the New Holland factory, I can see castings coming from a foundry 30 miles away and that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's interesting that we didn't see quite the same kind of problems that we did with hay equipment than we did with tractors, which electronics are part of it, but it's, I think the whole supply chain is a lot more local.
That's a very unique take on the equipment industry. I like that.
On that supply side now, right, we could talk about the manufacturer side of it too, right?
Yep.
So everybody's seen prices run up, right?
That
is shocking to even us sometimes too now when we look and say what the invoices of some of these things are now. I think it was difficult for them, just as hard as it was for me to project my inventory needs, it was hard for them to project what something was going to cost them to build with as quickly as prices were moving. I think in some cases they probably overshot. It would look to me now that that's starting to turn around now and they're giving some of that money back. So, you're never going to see like an MSRP number start to come down again. When we look and we say like the money that it costs to offer 0% financing now is grossly higher than what it was 3, 4, and 5 years ago.
That's been one of the big changes in the industry is that interest rate. And this is one of the places where that interest rate plays in. Is those promotional financing deals, they get a lot tougher to pencil out.
They get a lot tougher to pencil out. And so I'm seeing now like, hey, like 0.60 in a lot of cases is kind of back again and is way more expensive to offer than what it was before. And so I would say, you know, some of the production costs might be moderating now. And so that money is being pumped back into promotional rate financing and better cash discounts and that kind of stuff. So while you're not going to see MSRP prices for equipment come down, that's a hard thing to do. You're definitely seeing more promotional spending in order to give attractive ways to sell that equipment, right? You know, we shook our heads sometimes over the last couple of years, sometimes when we looked at what things were selling for and what auction prices were bringing and that kind of stuff. And I think we're returning to some normalcy now again.
Well, I sure like the sound of that.
We do too.
I'd like to just have an average year and not an average over several years because there's been some big ups and some big downs. Just an average would be nice.
No, it's not fun for us. It's required us to learn a whole new way of doing business and pre-selling and supply chain nonsense, which is stuff that we weren't used to.
Right.
But yeah, good for things to get back to normal.
What's the lead time if somebody wants to come in and order something brand new off the shelf?
In a lot of cases, we're back to say 4 to 6 months worth of inventory. So we have a lot of stuff now. There are still some places we still have a little bit of trouble in, like skid steers, track loaders. There's cases where we don't have the variety of stuff that we would always want.
Mm-hmm.
80% of the time, we're going to have what you want. And the other 20% of the time, it's going to be just a couple of weeks before we're able to get it. So it's, totally different scenario than what it used to be.
That's encouraging. Encouraging is the word I want to use from the farmer's perspective. We don't want to have to go and search at auctions and hunt and hope and pray that something gets delivered. I mean, there's lots of stories out there of producers that ordered something and a long, long time later, they finally got it. That sounds like there's an element of stability in the industry that didn't exist in the last 5 years, maybe, or 4 years.
Yeah, that's right. For sure.
One of the things that I always like to talk about with you is your parts department.
Yeah.
Because I love your model that I can call up. Now, that, in all fairness, Messix is, you guys are paying for some advertising. I'm just going to tell you that I love your parts model, because I can call up and your parts guy says, let me go put my hands on it. And this is one of the best stories in all of agriculture, is that you guys have the inventory. Is that ever going to change?
I hope not.
Good grief. I do worry a little bit about the carrying cost on large inventories, right? We were just talking about interest rates, and you guys aren't exempt.
Yeah.
Is that any kind of disruption?
We carry $20 to $25 million worth of parts inventory.
Right.
So there's an epic amount of stuff sitting on our shelves. The parts game, one of the things that I think we bring to this that's always been really helpful is we're a very technically minded company. My background personally is in IT.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it comes to writing software for demand planning and making sure things are turning, and there's a huge amount of parts sitting on our shelves, but we have the data behind it to know that it's going to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And having the right stuff at the right time. So it's the inventory side is it's a big benefit, right? We're not a just in time type supplier for these things, right? There's a lot of depth on our shelves.
I just absolutely love that model of your parts guys sitting in the middle of the warehouse. That is so foreign to the every other section of the industry.
Yeah, it's a big benefit to them. I mean, they can stand up and walk out and look at something that you need and, kind of give you the measurements or ideas of what you're buying. And, we take pictures of all that stuff when it goes in. So when you want to see it, there's photos online and that kind of stuff. And it's just there's no substitute for inventory or for people, to be able to have that guy that you can pick up the phone and call and get an expert on the other side.
What's your experience with people? As I talk to everybody in business, people is always the sticking point where there's some trouble. A lot of the equipment that you're selling parts for is not new. And the expertise around that, do you find that those skill sets are being lost? I'm going to reframe this just a little bit to give you some time to think about it, if nothing else. I started out with a 273 New Holland. That was my first baler. Mm-hmm. That was worn out twice before I was born.
Right.
But there's still folks out there running those balers, and they need parts, and they need people that know those pieces of equipment. Is that getting harder?
There's aspects. I mean, some things are always going to be the same, right? It is, if you understand the newer machinery, being able to take that knowledge and look at the diagrams and stuff with the older ones and work out what's going on, you can kind of do. We also have full-time trainers. So, while we're onboarding people, there's always a lengthy training process that everybody goes through. We go through seasonal trainings. As right now, when all the hay equipment is headed to the field, our trainers are putting together refresher courses and stuff for our parts staff so that they've, are fresh and seeing that stuff when it's going out. But yes, I mean, you are right that generation now of people that, worked on that stuff when it was in its prime are fading away now, right? They're retiring.
Yep.
In many cases, we're holding on to those guys as long as what we can.
sure.
a lot of them, in our case, they'll go part-time. We've got a couple now that are work from home and that kind of stuff that are telephone resources for us and that kind of stuff to kind of give some of that knowledge. But yeah, it is a challenge. You do what you can, but, you know, I'd say at the same time, some of that equipment too, as it is starting to age out.
Yep.
You know, that baler that you used to wrench on, it might not be worth it anymore.
Right. Yeah.
And so that is happening too.
Let's take a break there and we'll get a word from our sponsor.
Looking to get more from your alfalfa seed? Plant cropland. Achieve your alfalfa production goals with a well-crafted plan. New AA series varieties from cropland provide significant improvement in overall plant health, improving yield, quality, and persistence. Find the new AA series variety that works for you, available in conventional Roundup Ready or reduced lignin harvester trait platforms. Cropland has the right fit for your need. For insights and more information that will work for you, go to www.cropland.com.
Just you and I are just old enough to, I mean, remember some of the first balers still working, right?
Yeah.
We're in a little bit of a shift here. Because the balers were really, you might know this better than I do, but 40s and 50s were some of the first functional balers.
Right.
And when we were little, there were a few of those still running around. Now that's just not going to be the case anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's the iron just isn't lasting at this point, right? Yep. So you get to the point that you've got a structural issue now, and it's not just fixing a knotter at this point, right?
Yep.
So,
yep.
Following the people, right? As the people are just not, that would have started with that stuff are yep. aging out of the workforce, but the equipment is kind of seeming to go with them too, in a sense. But we do our best to keep it all going. In our case, we actually still buy a lot of those old balers. We still trade a lot of them in because we manufacture a mini baler too in conjunction with some Amish shops.
Yeah.
So those balers are still very desirable to us because we send them off to an Amish outfit that will go through and refit them and knock the bale chamber down and rebuild it to make small bales. So we still like having those balers around and being able to trade it when we can because it's a core for us in creating a new baler.
Fascinating. What are the trends that you're watching for the next 5 or 10 years? And let's narrow it down to tractors and hay equipment, right? Is there anything in particular that you see?
You can't get away from the electrification stuff in the news, right? So it's coming. I don't think any of us are super excited for it at this point because we know the bumps in the road that are going to come.
Yep.
And we know the cost implications for some of this too. There's some 75 horse battery powered tractors floating around out there, and I'm hearing good things on the engineering side of things.
Yeah.
They seem to like how they run. My jaw dropped when I heard potential costs you know, like many of this stuff to make sense financially is going to take some kind of like government subsubsidy.
That's not what I want to hear. That's not the story that we want to tell.
Right. When you go and pencil it out, this is how new technology is, right?
Oh, yeah.
You go and pencil it out. That early adopter that, you know, it's just, if you have the use for it, you need to swallow it and maybe take a swipe at something. But, you know, it is the start. Somebody's got to start somewhere, right? And maybe... Hey, 20 years down the road, does this start to become mainstream? Maybe it does.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to happen. And we see every manufacturer working on all kinds of battery and electric versions. I still have yet to have, you know, like I love my battery powered blower, my battery powered weed whacker and that kind of stuff. And it's priced right and it works great.
Yep.
And I'm still not seeing anything in the equipment business that I look at and say, it's priced right and it works great. Right. There's still... Yep. There's compromises with all the mowers and stuff that are starting to show up and some of the skid steer excavators that are out there. None of it's hitting that mass market point yet. And I think that could really take a lot longer than what anybody anticipates.
So I'm going to offer an opinion that's maybe contrary to mainstream agriculture. I hear... that you have some hesitancy around the electrification component. But I'm going to give a counterexample that I hope makes folks think a little bit. I'm in a part of the country where we have a lot of hydroelectric power. Our power cost is like 6.5 cents a kilowatt hour. That's
awesome.
That's relatively low, right?
Yeah.
So we have an irrigation pump that is run by a diesel generator, which absolutely. So diesel generator running the electric pump, that breaks my heart because the fuel cost on that is insane.
Yeah.
It's really not worth it, except the fact that we're keeping the water rates going, and in the West, water rates are everything.
Mm-hmm.
We did the math. We sat down and did the math and looked at the cost to run power back to that pump, and it was like a 2.5 year payoff.
Right.
The math is really, really easy on electrifying a stationary pump. We can take that and expand on that idea, right? This is almost heresy to talking about accepting of electrification. In some cases, it's going to be cheaper. But what you're talking about is finding that space in the market where it works.
And that's when I give a little hesitancy, that's where it's at. It's in that being able to go through and pencil this out that it makes sense, right?
Yep.
Because that's the point that it becomes mass market, and that's when our customers really start to accept it. For us, do we want to sell 3 battery-powered tractors a year? No, right? Because my training, my investment in getting those products out there is just too great. It's a headache for our business at that point more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's at that point that it starts to become mass market that it starts to really make sense. And I get a little annoyed sometimes, just watching the Ag News stuff that is talking about this stuff all the time, because it makes great press releases, battery tractors and drones and all this stuff. But find me the cases where I can go to somebody and say, this makes sense for 50% of that really starts to bring some adoption. And maybe we wear a little bit and get tired sometimes of of hype that never materializes. So it'll have its day for sure, but I don't see it in the near term.
Do you ever feel like we're missing an intermediate step going straight from combustion engines to electric? And I'm going to give you an example of the logging truck being built up in British Columbia. I don't know if you've seen this yet. But he's making a diesel electric logging truck.
Okay.
With regenerative braking, which, if you think about empty trucks going up a mountain to get logs and then loaded trucks coming back down, the fuel savings on that is going to be tremendous. And it's actually functional. Do we need to pause the industry for a second and say, why don't we go to a diesel electric model so we can get used to some of the electric components while still having the runtime, the uptime that we have to have in agriculture? Everybody mainstream that it depends on a piece of equipment knows that if the battery goes down and there's a rainstorm coming, it's unacceptable.
Right.
That's an unacceptable outcome. We can't have it.
Yeah, I go back to the same pencil it out thing. If there's an economical way to make this happen that advances that technology and makes something make sense for the end user, great, right? We have such efficient powertrains in these diesel engines today. It is a hard technology to replace, right?
Yeah, I know that if we talk about big tractors, the tractors that we have today are pretty darn efficient on a if you just break it down to gallons of fuel per acre covered, per hour of work, however you want to think about it, per horsepower hour, we got pretty good at this.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at other technologies too outside of like electrification, right? So New Holland's had a methane tractor running around for a long time. I mean, there's farms near me that have digesters on them that could be powering a methane tractor off of their manure pits, right?
Yep.
I've heard good things about that machine too. And for whatever reason, it's just that's the adoption, the mass market appeal for that machine isn't quite there yet. The way things seem. But yeah, it's a spectrum of technology out there that could be useful in our business.
And all of that, you just said carbon is driving the equipment world for the next 5 and 10 years.
Sure. I mean, or more. Yeah.
Or more. Yeah. Fair. Fair, fair. I didn't mean to put words in your mouth there, but it's just hard to think about anything else that where we have a lot of outside influence coming in and driving those changes, right?
Yeah, it's just echo what I said before. There's such a call it almost Silicon Valley influence on this kind of stuff, right? Of great ideas that just don't have real world application. And at least on the retail side of things, I like to see. Somebody needs to figure out some new products, but we need a pathway to viability for some of this stuff.
Neil, was there anything else that you needed to check off your list for today?
I mean, we advanced on parts a little bit. The one thing I spend most of my day on is working on better ways to service customers and sell parts. And the one thing that I recently rolled out here on our website that I think is super cool that I have not seen anybody else do is a tool to find obsolete parts. So when our OEMs go and drop support for a part number, our developers wrote a tool that goes out and searches three different obsolete warehouses and three different aftermarket suppliers trying to find a source for that part number. And it is as easy as typing the number in and hitting go, and it will go and it'll check all of those things in about 2 to 3 seconds. We talked about all those people down here that are answering the phone and working on finding parts for you. It's an awesome resource for them because when they don't have something come up in a manufacturer's catalog, they can punch a number and have an answer and a sourcing option for you just like that. So on the support side, I thought that has been super cool to me to see how that whole thing has rolled out. And continuing to work on, you know, like web-based ways to be able to give you more information, to be able to get set up with the equipment parts that you need. So happy to help when whole goods and all the new machinery for people close to home. But if we're talking to the Haykings audience here, we've got an awesome parts department too, to be able to help you out. So yeah, well, let us know if we can be of assistance.
That is cool. I really appreciate that. And I want to put a point on this. An obsolete parts search is desperately needed in the industry because the stuff exists almost all the time. Something exists. Whatever the part is, there's something that's close enough or something that's sitting on a shelf somewhere that it exists. That's really cool that you guys developed something to help folks find obsolete parts. I suspect you're going to start getting some more calls here.
I'm going on more goose chases on things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's you're building basically a search engine for it, right? And the cool thing about it was here the other day, once you go and you type that number in and it looks for the part, it gives you a result. Sometimes it finds it, sometimes it doesn't. But you can save that, and it'll stick it here in our system, and we will continue to watch for it. And if it shows up somewhere, we'll shoot you an email and let you know that it showed up. And the hit rate on that has been, it's not huge. It's only 1 or 2%, mm-hmm. but the fact that it's 1 or 2%, I still think is really cool. You know, like somebody needed that item and it showed up in an obsolete warehouse somewhere.
Right.
And the computer can tell you the moment that it's there. And it's that kind of stuff. I love working on things that solve problems like that for people because it elevates the way that we at Messex can serve people, right? It's things that nobody else does. And that one has been really exciting to me. So got more ideas like that in our back pocket. We're continuing to grind away and improve on these kinds of things, but that one is out and it's working and it's doing great stuff.
That's cool.
The search engine tool does have some logic in it that says this is a direct OEM replacement and this is a cross reference that's probably okay. Mm-hmm. And it gives you some of that clarity. You know, hey, these are new software tools. And so we're still kind of massaging how some of that stuff works and looking for more things to wire into it. You know, right. I'd love to be able to offer like a used part, right?
Yep.
And those kinds of alternatives. And we don't have anybody that has data that's quite tidy enough to be able to do that, right? But
yep.
We get a little closer every time we kind of go back and revisit this idea.
Oh, that's cool. I really appreciate your development. Like that takes time and effort and energy. That is really cool.
Yeah. And I'd say that's the kind of stuff that makes us a little different, right? It just being willing to invest in those kinds of things that add benefit to our customers. And, you know, it's an expensive project to put together and it won't pay us dividends right away. But if it earns us customers over the long haul, my goodness, is it worth every effort? So,
Neil, I'm still waiting for a West Coast warehouse so I can get your parts quicker than 5 days.
So that changed too. So you're now 2 days for us.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, you are.
That's wicked quick.
that's a new change. So there will be some limitations in that, in size and dimensions and that kind of stuff.
Yep.
But
big stuff is slower.
Big stuff is slower, right? But most anything under 50 pounds in a reasonably sized box, you will be 2 days from us now. So we That just happened here a couple weeks ago.
Oh, so I am actually breaking news here. This is cool.
Yeah.
This has been a great discussion.
Oh, always appreciate it. Great talking to you.
I want to make sure that folks find exactly where to go. What's a good website?
Our website would be messix.com, or if you'd like to reach us by phone, because you could do all this cool self-service thing, but at the end of the day, like, we're all people, right?
And yep.
we want to deal with people. Don't hesitate to give us a call at 800-222-3373.
Now, that's been Neil Messick, one of the family owners with Messix. And I want to say thank you, my usual thank you to Nick Palmieri at Palmieri Sound for editing these episodes, Jessica Palmieri for doing our social media marketing and distribution, and thank you to all of our various sponsors for the podcast helping to make this happen.